Hi, true believers.
John?
Nuff said.
I'm Drew.
And I'm John. And you're listening to The Hourchive, our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
A lot of guys will focus a lot on the details, and as long as you got Spider-Man.
That's what everybody's eyes are on Spider-Man.
Books.
Everybody who buys this comic book, their eyes are on Spider-Man. Yeah. They're not on the details.
What I did is you got to pinch your throat a bit.
I don't know if I came up with it, but maybe I popularized it, but. You know, I did it's called spaghetti webs.
These spaghetti webs.
And, you know, you pick up a comic book, a Spider-Man comic book, and you're going to see the spaghetti webs.
That's our impression of Todd McFarlane.
The lightning storm of controversy in the comic book industry.
Comic books, man.
Comics.
This is a big one.
Huge.
Big
this
one.
This is a giant-sized issue is what this
oh,
is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's an annual. Maybe it is an annual. Maybe we do this one every year.
Comics?
I don't know.
You got really excited about that.
I just like the idea of an annual.
Do you know?
But ironically, I always hated the annuals. Sorry. I remember I used to get so frustrated. The books that I read, you know, every month, you know, I would show up to the comic book store and I would go to my drawer and I would get my thing out and he would hand it to me and I'd be like, all right, what's happening in Incredible Hulk? Oh, damn it. It's the annual.
Wow.
Yeah. I always hated the annuals. Anyway.
What would happen with the annuals? It was sort of out of the storyline.
Yeah. It was often just this side story.
Yeah.
You know, it was divergent.
What I'm trying to remember, I recently learned why some books were referred to as giant size, and I think it was it longer?
Yeah, they were bigger.
Yeah.
Normal book would be like 22 pages or something, and these were 95
double?
Pages.
Oh, even more, yeah.
Yeah.
Comic books have permeated my life.
Oh.
Do you remember the first time you read a comic?
Yes.
Do you remember the first comic that you read?
I remember my very first comic book.
What?
Spectacular Spider-Man number 88.
My first comic book, I don't remember the issue, but I remember that it was an X-Men comic book and it was given to me by my brother.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was it handed down?
Had he previously owned it? Okay. This is my memory. Maybe he'll dispute it.
Sure.
Yeah, it was his, I think.
Huh.
And that was the beginning.
From that one issue, you were hooked?
No, not really.
Yeah, I think I had that one issue of Spider-Man for about 4 years before I actually got into comic books.
Yeah, I got into comics probably in the 90s when the X-Men cartoon came out and I started reading the X-Men comics.
That was your gateway.
Yeah. And then from there, I sort of branched into Spider-Man. Eventually I read a little, I never actually kept up with any DC books. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I would get issues here and there just to get something different. The same with a lot of the other kind of main titles under Marvel. The only thing I sort of devotedly read was X-Men and Spider-Man and the various spin-offs from those series.
Yeah.
You know, X-Men,
your
Uncanny
sidecar
X-Men,
stories,
X-Factor, X-Force, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Sensational Spider-Man,
Web of Spider-Man,
Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Yeah.
Spider-Man. There was what one that was just called Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was yeah.
That's what you started with.
I think so.
Damn it. I was gonna make fun of you for for getting into comics via
the sidecars.
The cartoon, the X-Men animated series.
Yeah.
But my entry was through
what?
A show that was on like the equivalent of the WB. It was like a syndicated show called My Secret Identity, starring Jerry O'Connell.
That might have more cred though than my entry.
I don't know. Maybe. But he was a kid. He read. Yeah. He was obsessed with superhero comics. He collected them. Excuse me. He was hit by this magic laser ray thing that his neighbor had in his basement.
Yeah.
And it gave him the ability to. He didn't really fly, but he could levitate.
I'm walking on air. Is that how it goes?
Yeah. That was a different show, though.
No, it wasn't.
That was Greatest American Hero.
Oh.
Which had nothing to do with comic books.
My Secret Identity. Something like that, right?
Yeah, that had a great theme song.
Who was the dad?
There was no dad.
Who was the neighbor?
That was
Wilford Brimley.
No. Dr. J. Dr. Jeffcoat.
No, but who's the actor? Forget.
I don't know, but he was in a Police Academy movie. I saw him again in a Police Academy movie. I wish.
Man.
No, I don't know who that guy was, but it was Jerry O'Connell was the kid.
Yeah.
Marsha Moreau was his little sister, who I had a major crush on.
All right.
And I always thought, like, man, if I could just have superpowers, I could impress the sister.
But it's his sister.
Yeah, I didn't want to be him and impress his sister. I wanted to be me, have his powers, and impress his sister.
His powers were that he had two spray cans.
He could float.
And he could float by shooting those spray cans.
That's
at the
how
floor.
He gave himself direction. That's how he directed himself.
Those are like his thrusters.
Yeah. He could float. But he also had super strength and super speed, too. Okay. So he could read things really fast.
I watched this show.
It's a good show.
I think I caught like the tail end of it, though.
There was a great run. It was Superboy, My Secret Identity, and Out of This World. And then 21 Jump Street every Saturday afternoon.
I did not like Out of This World.
You did not?
Well, this is not about this.
We're not talking about that.
We're getting way too far.
We got into comics via these other avenues. But that was, I say this anyway, because it was the first time where I realized that there was some sort of connection between these things.
Okay.
Like prior to that, I was like, Spider-Man book, Superman book. Yeah. You know, I didn't think about these things as having any kind of thread or continuity. And that I think is the big, that's the heart of comics, is the continuity.
Is that how you read comics, though? You just read the title? Spider-Man book, Superman book.
And then I was done.
And your dad's upstairs, what's he doing? And your mom's like, he's reading, air quotes, his comics. He's just got the two?
Yeah.
Spider-Man book. Superman book. What?
Sometimes I read them out of sequence.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider-Man book.
And then Enter Sandman would come on. What's he doing now? He's stomping around his room. Asterisk. C90s music. I watched the cartoon X-Men and I loved it from the first step. That was a good cartoon.
Sure.
The animation was not great, especially looking back at it, but it was great as a cartoon because they really involved a lot of the storylines from the comics, and you know they had decades worth to sort of draw from, and they hit a lot of the sort of major plot points. But from the get-go, that cartoon had me, and so I started getting into comics, you know, proper from that point. And in my area, there were several comic book stores that I frequented. And I'll be interested to know if you ever went to any of these shops.
I'm curious now.
Probably the one I went to the most at my youngest stage of reading comics was a place called Comics Etc. And, it was pretty small. It was a little shop. But I would always be, my dad called it Comics Ets. And I was constantly, you know, asking if we could go. Eventually that closed down, and when I got to the age where I could kind of drive and get places myself, there were like, I guess, two shops. Well, There was one I frequented. That was the one of them was my store.
That was your store.
And it was
right?
called Comics Universe.
Okay, yeah, I know where that's at, or was.
They had a big back issue catalog, you know, and I would go there frequently to get to pick up my comics. Now I didn't have a box like you. I never.
Oh, you didn't have a subscription.
I didn't have a
thing?
Pull and hold subscription. I just would go and get the comic. You know what I mean?
Did you know, like, were you on, like, a schedule? Yeah. Like, you knew that this week, this book is coming out.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other shop that I went to only a couple times, and I'll tell you why, was one called Comics, Cards, and More.
Oh, it sounds ghastly already.
So I went there a couple times, and the final time I went there, I walked in, and I saw that there was a... like a Jay and Silent Bob comic. And this was right after, I think right after Dogma had come out. And I was like, oh, cool. And I picked it up and I was looking through it. And the purveyor of the shop says, you can't read that. You gotta put that down. That's 18 or older. Hmm. And I'm like, what?
You're like, I'm 27.
I don't know how old I was. I apparently didn't look old enough to be reading
it.
So I set it down and I left. I never went back.
Nice work.
Never went back.
Good job. But that place isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what happened?
Nail in the coffin.
There are a lot of comic shops around here, though.
Took their business right out the door with you.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, we were sort of in a nexus of comic book stores. See, I've never talked about this really with anybody who grew up in another area.
Yeah.
I don't know if our experience is comparable to those other areas. I mean, I feel like it had to have been...
What other
They had
areas?
To proliferate in other areas, too.
What do you mean by other areas?
You know, other cities.
Yeah, I don't know. I can tell you that when I was probably in my early... when I was like 20, actually. Mm-hmm. I believe I told the story on this podcast of the... Did I tell the story the first time I got drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wizards.
Yeah.
You're a wizard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that episode?
That was the Suburbia episode.
Suburbia.
Naperville.
Yeah. So in that same trip that I took with my friend Brett, who's been on the show.
Star Trek. Asterix.
We were...
Star Trek episode.
We were determined to find a comic book store in the Chicago area. Because we thought this will probably be a great shop, you know, because I'm sure it'll get lots of traffic, you know, from people. There's so many people in Chicago.
Sure.
They get their comics somewhere. We spent hours trying to find a comic shop.
Like driving around trying to find one or?
We spent a good hour driving in a cab.
Oh, wow.
We were like, well, here's the thing. I think we looked it up in a phone book. Comic books.
This is what you do when you go to a city. No, because I remember doing this. Yeah, you go to there, you crack open the phone books. This is before internet, or at least before people knew how to use the internet.
Yeah, no, this was pre-internet.
And you open up the thing and you look for comics.
Yeah.
Or collectibles or something like that. And then you would find a store and then try to figure out where it was.
So we picked one out that sounded good. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was called. Maybe they had like an ad.
Comics Crap Hole.
Yeah, Comics Crap Hole in Chicago. And we get in a cab and we're like, we want to go here. We give him the address. He's like, okay. And what he didn't tell us is this was like an hour away
because of
traffic. And, you know, it wasn't in Chicago proper. It was like out in the suburbs or something. And it gets to a point where like been in the car for an hour and we're looking at the fare. And we're like, can you just drop us off here? And we paid the fare.
Oh, man.
And I think we caught, like, the L train or something back. And it was, like, a total failure.
Oh.
I don't think I'm pretty sure we didn't find this shop. And it was such a disappointment. We'll be right back.
ever make it back to that store?
What store?
The store you were going to. Did you ever, like, on another trip or anything?
No. You know, I think, though, we did find a shop eventually in that city, and it was really lame.
That's the thing with the comic book stores. You either hit the jackpot or you strike out completely.
Yeah, there's rarely an in-between.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, yeah. I think now maybe they're all sort of in-between.
It's hard now.
Yeah.
At least maybe in this area.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, what's happening with comic book shops is they're struggling to remain profitable because, like many things, the comics are being consumed digitally, you know, that's starting to sort of pick up, and you can read your comics on iPads and notebooks and all that stuff.
Yep.
And it's good. Like, it's not like it's a good experience.
Right.
You know what I mean? The way that you interface with a comic digitally is cool.
Yeah.
And it's fun. And so I think that, you know, now more than ever, comic book shops are trying to broaden their inventory beyond just comics, you know, so they have, like, collectible card games, and they have board games, and they have all, you
toys.
Know, any sort of nerdy, dorky thing that feels like it's connected, you know?
Yeah.
That's what they're selling.
Yeah, they're more like nerd emporiums now than they are strictly comic book stores.
And in some cases, I think that's fine. In other cases, I think that it's sort of taking attention away from, or taking the purveyor's attention away from the presentation and distribution of those comics.
I think they've had to struggle with the publishers too. I think you know, there've been a lot of
they're kind of the caught in the crossfire.
They are, and they're in a weird relationship where they each sort of depend on each other, but neither one of them likes that relationship.
Yeah,
you know, I think one of them would cut the other one out if they could.
You're saying the publisher and the comic shop owner.
Yeah. So these are like anybody who directly buys comic books from a publisher and then sells them, like they're sort of at odds, and I feel like they have been at least for the last like 20 years, maybe more than that.
I don't think it's ever been a really great relationship.
No, I'm sure it hasn't. Probably not. But the publishers are struggling to. They're stuck in a rut.
Yeah.
They're both stuck in a rut.
Yeah.
They have an audience that is diminishing.
Yep.
And not being replenished.
Well, they have a diminishing audience, and the audience that's still there is entrenched.
Yes.
In very specific
terms. Yeah. Like, you cannot deviate from those terms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like I heard somewhere recently someone describing, or maybe I read, like the relationship or maybe the sort of onus that is on the comic shop owner, where their inventory, they have to keep it moving, you know, they have to turn things around, and they're buying, you know, they don't buy a title because of, how do I phrase this? It's the way this works. Hopefully I can get this right. You've got the publisher, right? Or maybe more, it's more accurate to say this distributor, you know, like I think Diamond,
Diamond Comics Distributors.
Yeah. That's like the main one.
The only one, really.
The only one.
Yeah.
So they're the ones who they're distributing DC and Marvel and whatever, right? And
they get you get the catalog. I mean, I assume this is still what happens. So this comic book store gets a catalog, and
from
it says
Diamond,
in 4 months,
these
are the titles that are going to be published by all these different publishers.
And the comic book shop owner has to plan ahead 4 months,
right?
And say, these are the books I'm gonna buy. Like, they literally have to buy
these
books.
Them. Yeah, they're not
It's not, they're not a
this isn't
channel.
Like a consignment right. type thing. Yeah.
They literally buy stock and yeah. then have to hope that in 4 months, the choice they made was the right one on what's going to be popular.
Yeah.
And so they're going to rely, they like, just like, you know, kind of the major publishers are going to go with what they know is going to sell. Right. And so that's mm-hmm. going to be all the standards like X-Men and Spider-Man Batman. And Superman, Batman. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a whole lot of room for them to experiment with their inventory, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's, I think that's becoming even a more narrow kind
Seems
of
like
field. Right. I mean, yeah. and so they're kind of in a really hard spot in terms of they hear the customer right in their ear. Telling them what they like or don't like
right.
about comics, about
or just
shop.
Buying what they
exactly yeah.
or not buying.
And they've got the distributor and the publisher on the other side pushing, you know, whatever it is they push,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they're kind of at the mercy of both
and this,
parties.
This is particularly it's like especially precarious because you've got the store owner buying Batman number 55.
Yeah.
Because all of the Batman titles sell. People buy the Batman titles, right?
Because Batman The Dark Knight Rises comes out.
Right. It's a popular movie.
So in this month.
Buying Batman. Yeah, okay.
It's going to sell.
Great. Everybody gets this Batman issue and they're like, well, man, this is just like the last Batman issue. This sucks. I really wish there was something different that I could, you know, that I could read.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to take risks, you know, do right. something unusual, right?
Right.
Okay. So the publisher says, all right, well, we're going to do something different. We're going to do Batman in black and white.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a girl.
Something different.
And...
quotes.
Right. It's something different.
Yeah.
So the publisher says, you know, okay, we'll do these things differently. And the store looks at that and says, what the hell? They did something different. Well, that nobody's going to buy that.
Exactly.
Nobody, I'm going to get stuck with 14 copies of Batman black and white. Now Batman's a girl.
I'll buy three of these.
Yeah.
Because I know it's not going to sell.
Nobody's going to buy it, right? And then so DC says, "Oh, nobody wants anything different.
Exactly.
Nobody bought Batman is a girl in black and white, so nobody wants anything different.
Yeah.
Do the exact same Batman book.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the cycle that
that's what happens. Vicious cycle. Yeah.
And then going back to the box, that wasn't always the way it was. The subscription thing wasn't always the way I encountered mm-hmm. comics. When I first started going to comic book stores, it was literally just like
rifling
a shelf
through.
Of new releases. There were like a dozen new releases, and that was it. And then there was back issues, right? And then I guess what happened was just try to combat that, to try to keep people coming
retain customers.
Right. They you get on this subscription thing, mm-hmm. so you sort of know, or you at least are assuming that when you have a person who's a subscriber through your store,
mm-hmm.
they're going to come in. They're always going to buy these books that they're subscribing
right.
to. So you know you're going to sell those copies.
Right.
So you're not out anything. You don't have to run the risk of
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be stuck with 55 copies of Batman is a Girl in black and white. So.
Yeah.
And these are the kinds of things that happen. Yeah. It's like, you know.
Oh, it's yeah.
The
Hulk
the
is
changes
red.
That are supposed to cause these like climactic shifts.
Shattering change. Yeah.
Are things like, you know,
Red Hulk.
Now the costume has blue highlights.
Oh.
Also, some insignificant character dies.
Yeah. And some other character just came back to life.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, but it happened, and it's new.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the subscription thing started, and that worked out well for both people because, one, I don't have to run down to the comic book store to make sure that I'm going to get my
right.
copy of Superman Dies Again. I know that it's going to be there, right? As long as the Joker behind the counter doesn't pull it out of my slot and give it to somebody else who just walked in and
Does
said,
that happen?
Hey, I'll give you $20 for that.
Has that ever happened to you?
I watched it happen. I watched it happen to other people. it might have actually happened for my benefit. Like, I might have gone into the store and been like, hey, did you get a copy of G.I. Joe? And they'll be like, rifling through the boxes. Here you go.
Yeah, here you go.
So, yeah, like a really vicious, stormy situation.
It's hard for anyone, I think. All parties involved are kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And really, and this doesn't help the comic purveyor in any way that I can see, but the model of the digital thing is sort of a way out of that rut to some degree, because there's, I would assume, less cost for the publisher to take chances on titles.
Right.
Because, you know, they don't have to worry about distribution or production, physical production of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just have to get the comic made and then put it out digitally.
Right.
And if it's,
the creation of the content is still...
Yeah, it's going to be...
That's still there.
But, yeah, but...
Well, and the other thing, too, that works out in that situation, and I should... I guess this is my full disclosure statement. Digitally is pretty much how I read comics now, almost exclusively.
Yeah.
But the selling point there is you can always access a preview. You know, you can quote unquote flip through a book before you buy it.
Yeah.
Which, if your store doesn't carry the book, you can't do that. Going back to that whole dynamic where we're not going to stock anything we can't sell, so we can't take a chance on anything. You have to either go all in and stock stuff so that people can flip through it and decide that they want to buy it.
Yeah.
Or you can't stock it at all, you know. I was talking
to some friends very recently. This may have been like 2 days ago or something about local comic shops, and there was one around here, and it's, I think it's still around, but they had back issues and stuff, and they had new releases, but everything was bagged and boarded and taped
closed. Oh, even the new stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You couldn't look through it.
What the hell?
It was insane.
I hope that place is not still around.
It's still around.
No.
They did have an arcade cabinet in the store.
Well, that helps.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a help, I guess. Insane.
I would... The interesting thing is I have been... I don't have like any kind of pad device, you know?
Uh-huh.
I just got my phone... and I've read comics on it, but I don't like that.
Uh-huh.
It's so small on the phone.
Yeah.
But more and more, as the publishers have been sort of figuring out how to digitally distribute, I've been thinking, man, if this, I might get back into comics, at least the major titles, or really any titles, if I had that kind of device to read them on, you know?
It makes a huge difference, and it also, I think, it makes it easier for, just like anybody else now can publish an ebook.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can do that. You know, it also opens those doors for people who have the capability of creating art and stories,
yeah,
but don't have the mechanisms or the money to have them printed.
Yeah.
You know, they can do it digitally and get their story out there.
Much like many other industries now, the tools are becoming democratized.
Yeah.
Some people are trying to shut it down. But I'm not going to let them.
You, like, draw this or something?
I ain't getting them also the colors. The guy next to me draws it, but we both came up with the characters.
Next. Does that mean you ink it?
Well, it means that Holden draws the pictures in pencil, and then he gives it to me to go over in ink. Next.
So basically, you just trace.
It's not tracing, all right? I add depth and shading to give the image more definition. Only then does the drawing truly take shape.
No. You go over what he draws with a pen, all right? That's tracing.
Not really. Next.
Hey, man. Let me ask you something. Somebody draws something and then draws the exact same thing, like right on top.
Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Talk about what?
I want to talk about this whole the culture of collecting comic books.
Cool.
So we said earlier, you mentioned back issues.
Yeah.
And anybody who doesn't know comics, those are basically previous issues of a story. Yeah. So not the current issue, but anything that precedes that.
Yeah. A run. Typically, should we describe what a run is?
Yeah, a run is like a character or a creator's stretch on a series of books.
Right,
right. So like either the writer or the artist or whoever,
or typically, a combination.
Right. Yeah. Their run consists of the issues, consecutive issues that
this
they worked on.
This number to this number.
Right. Bagging and boarding.
Yeah. So comics are generally kept in cellophane, acetate. How would you describe the bag?
Polyurethane? Poly bags.
I just call them poly bags. A plastic bag.
Yeah.
Transparent.
But thicker than like, and yeah, more sturdier than like a grocery bag.
Yeah. And
clear.
Slipped into the bag is a cardboard or cardstock.
Mm-hmm. Acid-free cardstock. You don't want to yellow your pages.
Just big enough to fit into the bag,
right,
which is comic book sized.
Yeah.
And the good comic shops, when you bought a new release, would bag and board.
Oh, that's right.
They would either bag and board it for you.
Or they would offer you.
Or they would give you a bag and board for you, so you can do it yourself.
And this all came about, I mean, I don't know when this originated, because the process, the practice was already in place when I started reading books.
Yeah, same here.
But the idea behind this is that they preserve the comics,
right,
so you don't, like, because they were traditionally printed on fairly cheap paper, they would deteriorate after time.
Yep.
So this is a way to preserve them.
Yeah.
And that all came about because eventually older comic book issues started appreciating in value.
Yeah, became collector's items.
Right.
Especially as these characters, you know, and I could be wrong. So I think maybe in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, the phenomenon of comic books kind of began to explode. And you had, there was a period of time in comics where, I'm probably talking way out of school here, but where they were kind of just, I mean, they were not taking serious topics. They were kind of, you know, jokey, you know, even Batman. I mean, Batman was smiling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he and Robin, there was not the gritty Batman that you know of today. You know,
right,
it was lampoonish, and it was, you know, the comic, the word, like literally it was comical, you know? And a lot of these characters were treated, in that way. And in fact, I think Marvel may have been more serious and more realistic in quotes than DC. You know, and even
for a
before,
time, yeah, I think so.
And this whole industry, you know, it goes before Marvel, and there's EC Comics, and there's whatever, right?
They go back to the early 20s, yeah.
But I think in the mid to late 70s into the 80s, you start having regular storylines happen.
Mm-hmm.
You have people coming along and writing really serious topics and storylines. Alan Moore comes
on. I think what we typically associate with comics and the idea of the run and everything like that probably started with Stanley and Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
In the 60s.
Okay.
And then but I think that it appreciates, people begin to,
well, I think what I was going to say was people didn't really acknowledge it in the 60s.
Right.
You know. And it wasn't until
much
later.
It wasn't until retrospectively
that people are looking back like, these are worth a lot. You
right.
know, wow, I got, you know, first appearance of Spider-Man.
Right.
This is worth tons of money.
And it was partially because, you know, they were sort of cheap throwaway things. So there were fewer of them around.
Right.
You didn't have 1,000 copies of the first appearance of Spider-Man sitting around everywhere.
Right.
Like a gold mine.
That would be cool to have.
Okay. Yeah. 1,000 copies of...
No, I mean like a copy.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen one.
1,000 copies would be great.
I've stood in the presence of one.
Wow.
There's a... I think it's monthly or bi-monthly here. There's the Spectre Club.
I've never heard of
You're unaware of this? It's a group of comics enthusiasts, vendors, what have you. They collect in the VFW hall. They have a comic show, basically.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't know it had a name like the Spectre Club.
Yeah,
that's
Spectre
pretty
Club.
Badass.
But But there was a, I went there once and there was a copy of Amazing Stories, number 15.
Amazing Fantasy, yeah.
Or Amazing Fantasy, number 15.
Yeah.
Right? It's hanging right there off of this guy's little booth. You know, he had it in not a plat. I think it was hard case, you know?
Yeah, he better.
And I was like, whoa, that's cool.
It's that's my reaction. Is cool. It's impressive.
It's cool. First Spider-Man. It's a great cover, too.
Artifact. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But we were going to talk about bagging and boarding. So this came about because it was, these things fell apart really easily. Mm-hmm. So you kept them in bag and board, and it just sort of, that became the norm for every comic, even though now I'm sure they're made much sturdier.
Yeah.
I really loved the sort of feel of that, you know, like pulling a comic
out. The bag and board?
Yeah. Like when I would, man, I can remember it now, like leaving the comic book store and holding the bag, you know, that's only big enough to hold comics.
Right, right.
And I could feel the heft of them in my hands, and I'd get in the car and my parents had driven me. So I'm just pulling the comic out and like looking at it and pulling it. I'd probably read them by the time I got home. You know, it was just such an awesome experience. I loved everything about that. It's a lot like, you know, the feeling that I had when going to the video store or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was one of the highlights of your week. Yeah. And it was always new comic day. It was originally Thursday when I started collecting, and then it moved back to Wednesdays. Yeah. So Wednesday night was like just the greatest, you know. I'd live for Wednesday night and go to the comic book store and get stuff. And I loved the process, too.
Yeah.
Like now I look upon it and I think, geez, God, bags and boards and, you know, what the hell? Just read the book, you know? But then it was like, that was part of the, I loved sitting down. I had my bags, my boards, my tape, and you would sit there and, you know, process, quote unquote, your comics.
I have, in quotes, a collection. I mean, it's not really a collection. Mm-hmm. It's just the comics I bought over time.
Yeah.
But at one point, I bought a bunch of bags and a bunch of boards because I didn't have it, you know, for all of them. Mm-hmm. And I went through and processed, as you say, all of my comics. And I have long boxes.
Yeah.
I guess they're not long boxes. Oh, that's another term, right? Long box is
There's long boxes and short boxes.
Yeah, and a long box is a long box made to fit
holds like
comics.
100, 200 comics or something like that. Yeah.
And it's the dimensions are such that it fits, comics fit inside snugly.
Yeah.
And a short box is just a shorter version.
Yeah. In case you don't have enough room for a long box, you can.
And I have a few short boxes, is what I have. Yeah. I think I have 3 short boxes of comics. And then I have a bunch of loose comics.
Mm. Now, is that your cumulative collection over time?
Yeah.
Or is that, huh?
That would be it. I mean, I still have them.
I would have assume that you had amassed
I didn't, you know, like I said, I kind of stuck with certain titles and my attention span was not great. I mean, I would also get really discouraged by new artists on books and I'd stop reading them.
Yeah.
So there's a few books where they switch the artists and I just despised the
drop
work.
Out. Yeah. Yeah. It's weird how that happens.
Yeah. And I also would, I seem to have really poor luck in choosing new titles because there would be really short runs where it would just, they'd stop making it.
Yeah.
And so I have, there were a few books that I was really into and they just stopped making them altogether. Mm-hmm. I never collected in the true sense of the word, you know, I could see my, you know, if I was, well, I don't think even now, if comic culture was the same now as it was when I was into comics, at this age, when I had the money or the time to invest in a collection, I still don't think I would.
It's hard, I think, from an adult perspective. I find it really hard to conceive of collecting anything, you know, like, and arguably, like, comics are one of the better things, quote unquote better, you know, things you could collect because you can read them. You can, you can go back to them and continue to enjoy them.
But you shouldn't. Don't take them out of the bag.
Don't take them out of the bag. Yeah. You're going to ruin them. You jerk.
There's a great Calvin and Hobbes. I think it's a Calvin and Hobbes strip where Calvin lets Hobbes read one of his comics and he makes him use tongs to turn the pages and wear oven mitts or something.
That is, I think, that impression of preciousness.
Yeah.
I feel like it is unfortunately overstated a little bit, culturally. I think the perception of anyone who reads comics is that of the obsessive OCD.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was ever really that.
Well, in some cases.
Sure. No, I'm sure there are people out there, but I mean...
What is interesting to me that is that it is looked down upon to be so protective of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that person's property and they really want to make sure it retains its value and it mm-hmm. doesn't get damaged. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right. Nobody makes fun of a guy waxing his car.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You are of the two of us probably better equipped to make an assessment of the general sort of comic book purchaser, right? Mm. Whether or not the stereotype is accurate
mm-hmm.
on a wide basis because you worked at a comic book shop.
I did. I don't know that it was the most representative of the core comic audience because the store that I worked at had a lot of other stuff too.
Right.
Cards and actually cards probably made the bulk of the money. Yeah. This was during the height of Pokemon card collecting, which is a whole other thing, the whole collectible card games.
Yeah.
I would probably have a very spiteful take on a lot of that. But no, you had people who were looking for one thing in particular.
Yeah.
And that's it. And you had people who were like looking for such granular detail that are they come in with no concept of what they're looking for. They have like a word. It's literally like word association. It's like Buffy.
Yeah.
I want Buffy things and I know that I can get them in this comic book store.
Right.
Or you would have people who these are the ones that stand out most in my mind. They didn't necessarily have anything specific in mind, but they were very specific about the stuff they were like browsing.
Yeah.
So like guys who would like find a book and they know nothing about it and they would bring it up to me and they would say something like, is this where, does this have anything to do with the time that Spider-Man was encased in carbonite? And there was a guy, man. He was great. He always had either like a Kansas City Chiefs hat on or a Speed Racer hat on.
Okay.
And he would come in and he would sift through every book in the back issues. And mm-hmm. he would come up with one and he would be like, do you think that the Joker looks better in purple then Spider-Man looks in black?
What?
Completely arbitrary questions, you know? And, or, you know, he would be like, can I open this? And
man.
It never failed. He would open it and he would put it back. Never bought it, whatever it was. I don't think that guy ever bought anything.
That kind of customer is like funny the first time.
Right, right.
And then it becomes like...
Or in retrospect. Like I've actually bonded with other people who worked at other comic book stores and know who I'm talking about when I say these things. I'll be like, do you remember this guy? He used to walk in with the Star Trek uniform and the Jedi robes. He would pair them both and then be like, oh yeah, that was that guy. Like they're, these people, that's the thing. Yeah. They circulate the place. They get the whole thing. And I was the same way. day. You know, yeah. if I would tour the different stores.
Exactly.
You know? And in fact, some of my favorite memories from like high school, mm-hmm. Would be like once we had cars, you know, people yeah. like getting together with friends and going out. And it was a great thing to like introduce people to, you know, whenever yeah. like you had, once you were comfortable enough with like a girl, you know, where you could, you know, and it's funny, like, this is such a stereotype that you're taking somebody into this like inner sanctum, you know, you're taking somebody who does not belong into this,
right.
the place that holds all of this arcane knowledge.
Yeah.
But that's totally what it felt like. You know, it was like, here's you're this fascinating pocket of culture that you're introducing someone to.
Yeah. To do. There was a hot girl in the comic shop. She was looking at Doctor Who. There was an actual girl in the comic shop. What a momentous day. I had to check to make sure that she wasn't just a human-sized cardboard display. My competition was a kid with pimples and a guy in a wheelchair. So I knew I had to act fast. So many questions in my mind. What would be a good pickup line? Why had a hot girl just come in? If the Hulk fought Spider-Man, who would win? Good question. I guess that Spider-Man's advantage would be his webs and his manual dexterity. It's not something you can do steadily, I don't think, unless you are invested at a certain... What is something you can't do steadily?
The whole hitting the stores,
right.
You know, frequenting the thing. It's one thing to be like on a hunt, you know, say mm-hmm. you're collecting these things and you're hitting these stores for these specific issues.
Yeah.
I think it's another thing to be like, you are staying current with this stuff. I mean, you yeah. really have to be invested, I think,
yeah.
in order to have navigated the last 10, 15, 20 years of the industry.
I'm impressed with people who do it because, like, I just feel like the popular books are just sort of doing the same things over and over.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that in both instances with DC and Marvel, and we should probably talk about Image pretty soon here.
Oh, but yeah.
DC and Marvel, like, there's no longer small storylines. It's all epic cross title
mm-hmm.
Storylines that, you know, shake the foundations of the entire universe.
They yeah. revolutionize everything. You
and
know.
Everyone's, you know, they like the whole Marvel universe is split into two groups, and these are the mutants, and these are the people who hate the mutants.
Right.
And now these are the guys who agree with Tony Stark that everything should be robots, and these are the guys who think that everyone should be aliens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they keep doing these huge battles where lines are drawn, and it's these guys. Like, the most recent was Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was the most recent, but they've done Civil War.
It's an annual thing.
Yeah.
It started with, I think, Secret Wars in the 80s, and then now it's become, this yeah. is the thing they do every year.
Here's the big epic storyline.
Yeah.
The best one, in my opinion, was when I was reading comics. they did the this cross title thing that sort of began with the X-Men and it actually was sort of fed off of an old storyline where there was a so the character Bishop, who was from the future, had somehow told the X-Men that one of the X-Men was going to betray them. And it turned out, I think, to be Gambit. And then, like, the thing kept going, right? And Gambit was ultimately redeemed. I think I'm getting this right. But then, in the 90s, I think it was the 90s.
Asterisk.
Asterisk. They said, no, Gambit, that was the wrong betrayal. The real betrayal is coming, you know?
Hmm.
And it was all based off of this recording of Jean Grey saying, oh, my gosh, he betrayed us. I can't believe it, et cetera, right? And now we're finally going to learn who it what actually was that betrayed them. Mm. And it turns out, spoiler, that it was Professor X. And what happens is Professor X, like, mind melds with Magneto or something, and he becomes this new villain called Onslaught.
Mm.
And Onslaught...
I remember this now.
He fights everybody. Everybody in the Marvel Universe teams up to fight Onslaught. And it... Oh, this isn't the... Wait. This is a different one. I'm thinking a different one. I'll finish this up. This isn't my favorite. Sorry. I think this happened after my favorite. But... Yeah. Sorry. Okay, so Onslaught... He kills all of the heroes except for the X, like the mutants. And then that became a way to reboot a bunch of the books. They started Captain America Fantastic Four started over, and they call it Heroes Reborn. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my favorite. Scratch that. That was dumb. but it reminds me of my favorite because... My favorite, the villain is called Apocalypse, not Onslaught. Mm-hmm. So this storyline...
This is the Age of Apocalypse?
Yeah.
Okay.
What happens in this one is a character called Legion, I think, who is Charles Xavier's son, goes back in time to kill Magneto, but accidentally kills Professor X.
Oof.
And causes a new timeline to take place called the Age of Apocalypse. It is a world where Professor X never formed the X-Men, mm-hmm. and instead Magneto did. Magneto, a.k.a. Eric Lynchure, takes... So he's sort of like, because his best friend, Professor X, was killed, he decides he's going to carry on the legacy that Charles Xavier wanted, and he forms the X-Men. He's a good guy. But his X-Men are sort of like grittier, and they're prepared to do things Xavier's X-Men would never do to mm-hmm. get the job done. And in this world, a mutant called Apocalypse has taken over basically the Earth, and humans are now hunted, not mutants. Mm-hmm. And so the X-Men are kind of they're trying to protect humans and also destroy Apocalypse. But it was really cool because they essentially, this is the first time in my experience that I saw characters I was familiar with reimagined in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like if you take out the Professor X factor, what happens to these characters? How are they different?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool to me.
That's cool.
And it's certainly not an original idea, but it was original to me. That was my favorite big epic story.
And it was successful, too. I mean, a lot of people point to that done as really, being a really
well,
good series.
And it was a nice... I think it was short, you know? It was mm-hmm. like... I think each title that had this happen to it
mm-hmm.
was like 4 to 5 books long. You know,
mm-hmm.
they didn't do it for long. And eventually they reset the universe and went back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a reboot. It was just like a deviation and then back into the normal
to
stream.
The theme.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite epic story?
The one. A fake favorite and then a real favorite?
Yeah. Yeah. get it wrong first.
The first one that comes to mind, I don't know if it's a favorite, but it was the No Man's Land storyline in the Batman books.
Okay.
Probably like mid to late 90s. The decision was made, there was an earthquake. There was like a year-long storyline involving an earthquake that strikes Gotham City and how Batman tries to keep things together, right?
Literally.
Yes. He's holding blocks.
Come on! Robin. Help.
Get my bag. So that was 1 year-long thing. And then they did like another year-long thing, maybe even longer than that, called No Man's Land, where the government basically gives up. They're like, Gotham City is in ruins. We can't do anything about it. We're just going to cut it off. And so, and this was sort of touched upon a little bit in the last Dark Knight movie, this idea of cutting off Gotham City, But it wasn't like it was held hostage. It was more like Escape from New York,
where they
cut off the entire city, and everybody who stays in there is just sort of left to their own devices. They're like, yeah, you've had your opportunity to leave. Mm-hmm. Now you can't leave, so you know you're trapped in there. But Batman stays to try to keep to regain control of it. You know, to keep the all the inmates at bay. I think that's another thing too. Like Arkham Asylum is all the people are released.
Yeah.
So it basically sets Batman back all these years. He's got all these people, you know, chained up in Arkham Asylum and now they're loose. And they basically split into gangs.
Yeah.
And so he recruits his own gang essentially. Oh. And this is why it crossed over into other books. So there were all sort of Batman universe books.
Yeah.
But they all the storyline weaved into all of them, and everybody played their own part in this. Mm. That was probably the most interesting one. And I think what I like about it is because it was totally accessible.
Yeah.
But it took a cool concept anyway.
Yeah. You
know, here's the idea of a city that's cut off and people trying to get by in it without the rest of the world. And then you also add on the characters from Batman. Yeah, so it was sort of a recipe for success.
They kind of did a game. The game Arkham City is kind of like that, where they basically took a section of Gotham in this video game and they walled it off and they let the inmates of Arkham run free within there. And they formed gangs. And so there was the Joker gang and there was the Penguin gang. You know, so all these... main Rogues Gallery characters had their own little gangs inside of Arkham City, and Batman goes in to sort of police it because he knows something's going on. Like, this wasn't his opinion is it wasn't done as a way to alleviate crime or anything, that there's something going on in there that he needs to figure out.
That
it's actually a front for something else.
Ah, because he's a detective.
It's a great game.
What he does.
It's a great game. What was I going to say? Oh, Image Comics.
Image Comics.
We've been talking about Marvel and DC. Do we have time for Image?
I don't know. I feel like we might need to save Image for its own.
Man, we started off with Todd McFarlane.
All right. We'll touch a little bit on Image. Image, you could say, was either like the savior of the comics industry, or it was the first nail in its coffin.
Right. Well, okay, maybe we don't want to get deep into Image, but let's just, you know, there's Image Comics, Dark Horse Comics. There's a lot of smaller publishers that are really successful in their own right. And
they're sort of your... So if you say Marvel and DC are like... NBC and yeah, oh, that's even better. Yeah, Coke and Pepsi, right? So you've got Dark Horse Comics, which is like Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
And
Image Comics like Mountain Dew.
Yeah, although I think that's owned by Pepsi, but
yeah. So
anyway. There's your soda analogy.
What was another one?
There's Valiant Comics.
I was going to say Wildstorm, but I think
that was an Image imprint eventually became DC.
Well, an Image, the cool thing about Image is that they kind of, Image supported artists owning their own kind of publisher, you know, so I think
leaving them to their own devices. Yeah.
Jim Lee, I think, had Wildstorm, right? And there are
and various... it was made up. Image was made up of defecting artists from Marvel.
Right.
I think they were all from Marvel,
primarily,
and/or writers. I think they were mostly artists. Yeah.
There is one publisher that I cannot remember that I don't think they're around anymore. Anyway, but I think like Dark Horse and Image and the like. Is where you could go for more experimental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also, sometimes these books would get... like, Dark Horse, I think, had the rights to Star Wars.
Oh, yeah,
for a long time. Maybe still does?
Possibly.
Oh, Marvel would have it now, wouldn't they?
Do they own Dark Horse?
Well, Disney owns Marvel.
Oh, you're right.
Coach. And Disney owns Star Wars.
It's all starting to come together.
It
was also that Marvel could make Star Wars comics again. The whole reason.
Dark Horse is great about, I think, bringing kind of more niche things into comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Image is very much a since it was made up of defectors from Marvel, the stuff they put out was very much like superhero books.
It's like their own version of Marvel. Yeah.
And so I think, and that's not true across the board, but for primarily their success was in that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dark Horse, you could, you know, definitely have a lot more interesting titles, mm-hmm. you know, sci-fi and things that are beyond just superhero books.
And the great thing about those too, this in a way actually ties back into my original argument. I used to hate the annuals, right?
Yeah.
I used to hate anything that deviated from the regular storyline.
Right.
But what happened, what was great about those smaller imprints was that they could, the smaller publishers, they would do things like Image even started this way with just miniseries.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't do these long continuity. I mean, Batman was up to like 900 issues or something like that before they rebooted it, you know? I mean, where do you go?
Yeah.
You're a kid, you come in, you're like, okay, issue 858, and you think like,
what am I
missed? Have 857 issues I need to get caught up on, you know? Or and how do I know what's good and what's bad from all of that? But with these smaller ones, they would just take a chance and just do a four-issue thing.
Yeah.
It's a storyline, you know? And it started, it spilled over, I think. I really do believe that a lot of what we see in television now comes out of comics experimenting with this format where you tell a finite storyline and maybe it the characters eventually appear in another series or something like that. But this is the storyline and that's it.
Comics are feeding every other media industry at this point, you know, because there are a lot of original ideas in comics. I mean, they're not original anymore for people who have read comics for years, but, you know, movies, games, and television are all, you know, they're all looking for something else that's already done. You know, they don't spend a whole lot of money creating or investing creative thought into. They can just kind of take it, package it, put it out there.
Well, it's highly visual and it, you know, carries over well.
And it, and it's the, you know, the audience is a sure thing, you know. And so that's they're a prime source for the stuff that's coming out in all other sort of avenues of media.
Yeah.
I think we got to come back to comics. We didn't even talk about indie comics.
We need to go to the back issues.
And indie comics is where I became a maker of comics.
That's right. How are we going to do that? Are we doing that on another episode?
Maybe.
All right.
We'll see. Bag and board this one.
Comic book.